So one of the highlights of my fall was giving a talk at Business of Software in Boston at the end of September, or middle of September, I guess. It was a great talk. I had a lot of fun, went to the speaker center, stayed up way too late, drank way too much, hanging out with friends and fellow speakers. And I took a really early flight the next day because there was a hurricane supposedly coming in towards Boston. And I was really tired. I hadn't slept much. But I'm sitting on the plane. I've got my laptop open. And I'm sitting next to this woman who's going on vacation to Las Vegas. And so she's like chit-chatting and she's like, "Have you been to Las Vegas?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I have, like every year." And at some point I just kind of like put my headphones on and stopped engaging with her. And I started like crying on the plane pretty hard, which was very embarrassing and not really like my normal MO. But I was crying because I was writing this document, writing about our family and writing about all of the things that I love about you and I and our two boys, and writing about all the things that would change or that we would lose if I made a decision that I had to make or that we had to make together. So I'm on the plane, I've just given this great talk, and I'm like descending into this mess of tears and fear and worry about the future. Because that was like, I think a Tuesday. I came home on Tuesday and I turned around, and on Friday I got on a plane and I flew to California with the question in my mind of whether or not I would return home with two more children. And I think the plane ride after BOS, the plane ride home from Boston, crying on the plane, writing, trying to just put everything out into words, get it out on a piece of paper so I could sort of sort through how I felt about this decision. That was one of the most sort of pivotal moments for me in the last couple of months.
And so today we wanted to talk through what that experience has been like. And I wanted to frame it and structure it around a talk, actually really a non-talk. It was more of a conversation that I had from the stage of MicroConf Europe that was in Lisbon a few weeks ago. And kind of want to talk through not only that process, but kind of dive into the power that we have as entrepreneurs. And, you know, I think a lot of things that we take for granted and things we don't talk about in our space are things like, you know, once you've achieved freedom and you run a business, what next? Like that's the goal for so many people, but what else is there? You know, and what other moral imperative should we feel both to our families and, you know, colleagues, friends, and to the broader world?
I think I want to say also that today's episode's sort of intensely personal. And I mean, you use the term moral imperative, and I think that's a good term to use, but it's also one that is personal, like one that really reflects one's own individual values and approach to life. So we're going to talk about what has happened in us and in our family in the last couple of months, but this is us talking about this family situation and how it's shaped our businesses and how our businesses have shaped the decisions that we've made. It's definitely a personal one. It's about us.
Right. I don't want to come across as preachy, nor as, you know, we owe the world this as entrepreneurs or anything like that. But I do think that these are the things we've been mulling over for a while.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this woman, non-traditional,
a little more zen in the startup life.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
We got this phone call on a Sunday night from a social worker, letting us know that two children who are in our family, one of them we haven't seen for 9 years, one of them we've never met. And we got this call from the social worker saying that these kids were going to go into foster care unless we were willing to be sort of an emergency custody, emergency home for them.
And this is the kind of news that is really, it's kind of hard to absorb, and it's hard to imagine that it's real. I think the timeline, original timeline that was given was like 4 days or something. Like, you have 72 hours or some 96 hours to do this. That didn't turn out to be reality, but I think it was someone trying to kind of speed the process along. But this is insanely, I mean, it's just like dropping a bomb in the middle of your life, because you have a very short amount of time to decide, do we turn our lives upside down, put a lot of things on the line that we have carefully crafted, right? We have been very deliberate about the decisions we've made when we had kids, how many kids we had. Our house is set up for the number of people in there. We still fit in a sedan. We still fit in one hotel room. We travel a lot, and it's just like the perfect amount of people. So there's just so many things that we had crafted about our lives that if you say yes to this, that you could potentially just break it and spill it all out. But then how do you say no to it? You know, that's the hard part. It's like, what is, it feels like the right choice to do this, but at what cost?
Yeah. How do we say no, in the sense that we have abundant resources? I mean, we have more money than we need. I have more shoes than I need. I'll say it out loud. We have resources, both financially, but also emotionally, personally. We have energy, we have passion, we have community, we have support. You know, we have all of the things in place that you need to do hard things, which is why we've been able to do hard things. And so to be asked to do yet another hard thing, it's sort of like, hey, this is what we do. Like, we do hard things because we can, and because we're well suited for it and well resourced for it.
And it's also hard to think about all the things that we've, you know, we have planned in terms of our businesses and the growth that's happening with you and your, you know, kind of your brand right now, getting the book out, all the stuff that we've been thinking about, and trips we had planned to, you know, to Europe, and there was one to New England, tickets that have already been bought. I mean, some of that stuff short term, but you can tell that adding two more members of a family, going from 4 to 6, you know, one of our cars, two of our cars at the time wouldn't even hold that many people. I mean, it instantly calls a lot of stuff into questions. We don't have that many bedrooms in, you know, in the house, and we have to be in the house until sometime next year. So there was a lot of deliberation. I mean, you and I went back and forth, neither with such a strong opinion. You know, it wasn't so much a discussion of back and forth, you and I, you know, one person saying yes, one person saying no. It was both of us saying, I don't know, let's keep processing it for days on end.
The con list is tremendous. And then there's an unknown list that's even longer. All the things about how, like, what kind of shape are these kids in? They've had a really hard go of it. Like, what's their situation? What's their mental health? What's their physical health? How do they interact with other kids? And then our kids, and what it does to them to have their relationship disrupted, have our family dynamic disrupted. I mean, there's so many unknowns. And that's the hardest thing for me. Like, I can kind of play pro con really well. Like, I can do math with everybody else, but the list of unknowns that's just impossible to calculate or answer those questions is what makes a decision like this very, very difficult.
Right. And then the pros list was basically one bullet, and it was because it's the right thing to do. Right. I mean, that in our opinion, because it's the right thing to do. That was a hard thing to keep coming back to that.
So we decided no. And I said no to you. I said no to some of the people involved. And then you came back that night and said, you said, I don't know if you're playing reverse psychology on me, but when you said no, it made me feel like we should say yes. I was like, okay, well, I'm not playing reverse psychology, but I just, I'm trying to make a decision because I have to get on a plane.
Yeah. Oh, when you said no, it was such a relief. I got to be honest. But then there's just that thing in the back of your head kind of gnawing, you know, isn't this what we do? Isn't this who we are? Like, we can do this because we're entrepreneurs, you know, it's because we're people who, I mean, like, probably most people listening to this, like, we do hard things. You take on things that are highly uncertain, that you know are going to be hard, that are not going to have a short-term payback, that are going to require you to get out of your comfort zone. All this is starting a business. You know, that's what those things describe. And it also describes this decision. And so it's odd for you and I not to want to lean in, you know, to things like this, But obviously the potential negative ramifications of it are so substantial that it required a lot of processing.
And the reality is you can't lean in on all fronts at all times. Like, and we know that. We've learned that lesson before. Like, we can't lean in on two businesses, 2.5 business. I mean, we can't lean in on everything. That's not the nature of what it means to lean. Leaning is one direction. That's the physics of it. So I think that was the difficulty of, like, this will cost something. I mean, it will cost so much. Do we do that for people we don't know who are in a bad situation, but that we didn't cause? You know, like, we have no responsibility here other than responsibility that we choose.
Yep. And so I think it was somewhere between 2 and 3 weeks after that first call, you flew out and you came back with two more kids. And it was really a challenge. I mean, it's been a challenge for the past couple months, just a lot of ups and downs and
the logistics.
Yeah. The logistics
have been challenging. Like, yep. And I didn't even think through all of it, but like, our coat closet was like a nightmare. Like, there were two people's things in there, and now there were four kids, and then, well, there were four, and then now we need six. And it's just been like, where do everyone's socks go? And the kids arrived with nothing, like clothes on their back, nothing. So the first day we're like going to Target and getting socks and underwear and clothes for everybody. And the logistics turned out to be really challenging and time intensive at the beginning, like reorganizing the bedrooms, getting dressers, getting everybody situated so they had like a little corner to sleep in.
And then within, I think it was probably a week after that, I mean, you and I weren't sleeping very much because there was a time change going on and kids were stressed out. Everybody, including our kids, were stressed out. A little few too many people to be in the house all at once. And within a week of that, I actually sent an email to Mike and Xander, who I co-host MicroGonf with Mike, and then Xander's a coordinator that helps us run it. And I said, I had this quote, and I said, I have some news that may impact my ability to attend MicroConf Europe this year, which is a big thing to say because I've attended and really run every MicroConf, you know, with Mike and then more recently with Xander. And so it was a very hard thing to come to, but it was something that you and I talked about of like, we just can't do everything. Like, we're gonna break apart here. Something's got to give. And it was kind of a tough thing to do, but it really was this, it brought me to start to think about this thing that I've noticed in certain people and the people I get along with and the people I admire in life and in business are the people that value people over results. Okay. And you could say relationships over results. I like to say people over results. And what I mean by that is I've worked with, for, and around people who the results are what matters. You know, you think about Steve Jobs, or you think about Henry Ford, you think about Benjamin Franklin, you think about these great inventors and artists and stuff and business people, and they sacrificed and completely nuked all the relationships they had. Their kids disowned them. They didn't stay married. They had multiple marriages. They really were just tough people to deal with, but they got results, right? Because the results were the most important thing to them. And most titans of industry had this exact thing. There are a few exceptions to it. But what I've noticed is, like, in our community and the people who I tend to be around and who I tend to enjoy being around are those who value people over results. It's not that we don't want results. We still want to ship stuff. We still want to write the book. We still want to grow your business by 2 or 3x each year, but you're not willing to do that at the sacrifice of yourself, your sanity, of your family, of your close friends, of your colleagues, of the people that you love and trust. And that's something that has occurred to me as we've gone through this process is it's a hard thing to do. Because we all want results and we're all kind of seeking that as founders. But I feel like kind of the bootstrap founder ethos, and even if you're not bootstrapped, it's like if you've taken a bunch of venture funding, then yes, results over people. I mean, that's how they do it in that space. And that's one of the reasons why it doesn't jive with me personally very well.
That's what you sign on for if you do if you do
exactly.
It that way.
It's growth
that's what
over,
you're committing to.
Growth over any individual. You won't hear me talk smack about venture capital very much. I mean, I believe that in certain instances, you should do it. It's great to have growth capital. But the one thing that has always bothered me in all cases is that raising venture capital in almost every case means you care less about your people than about growth. Because the imperative on the investors and on the board and then on the CEO and then passed down is that you have to grow And if you have to sacrifice people along the way, then that's what happens. And that's the way a lot of businesses, I mean, this is one of the critiques of just business in general. And so I'm not, this is not some anti-capitalist rant. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not, you know, it's not all or nothing, right? It's not only people and no results, but it's when push comes to shove, like, who are you going to back? And maybe to you, people is, maybe it's just your spouse for now. Maybe it's your little family or a unit. Maybe it's your colleagues. Maybe you have, you know, three or four folks who you've hired and who work with you. Or maybe it's a 50-person company you've grown. But that deep down, you know that you are willing to, you know, take care of those people as much as you can within reason and not just always go after results over the people. And so, you know, I sent this, like I said, I sent this email to Mike and Xander and basically said, I don't think I can speak and I may not even show up. This is like 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks before the conference. And so I was devastated to send this. This was very hard for me to send it and I actually procrastinated on it. And you can imagine if you're working with a team of people who value results over people, then it's like, forget it, you know, get out of here. We don't like you. I mean,
like, get your crap together, dude. Get here anyway. Like, we don't care about your like sobbing heart story. Like,
yeah,
you made a commitment, follow through.
Right. And that's the responses from Mike and Xander. Mike's response was, I'm going to read from his email. He says, if you can't make it and we need to find another speaker or co-host, in the grand scheme of things, that feels like a rather trivial problem to solve. It's not as if the sprinkler system blew in the middle of the conference. Oh yeah, we made it through that too. And that got a good laugh when I actually said that at MicroConf. But he said, the short of it is this, don't worry about MicroConf. We've got your back. If you need anything lifted off your plate, please don't hesitate to ask for help. And Xander said, well, darn it. It actually was a four-letter word, star, 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 star. That's really tough. Not only do I understand how rough this must be for all of you, but I know how incredibly important it is for the kids. Completely understand about MicroConf Europe. Things will go on.
And I had to cancel. I did cancel a talk that I was scheduled to give in Seattle. And when I explained the situation, they were like, no problem. We'll find someone else. Like, we'll still pay for your ticket. Like, you know, just very, very gracious and very, very okay to value the fact that this was something important in a couple humans' lives. You know, I appreciated that. It feels so different because you and I both have such, we value our commitments so strongly that like to back out of something feels like such a big deal. And we like have such trepidation about that. But when we're on the receiving end of people over results, it's pretty amazing to receive that kind of like, hey, it's fine. Don't worry about it. We got you covered.
Yeah. And that's something that I've just thought about a lot is this people over results and the power that we have, like I said earlier, as entrepreneurs, just that we can, I hate it when startups say, I want to change the world. I'm going to make a dent in the universe because it's so cliche, but you can change the world, but maybe for only five people, or maybe it's for 20, maybe it's for 50, but it's your people. You know, it's that circle that you choose to have influence on. It's like, we have power as founders, let's use it for good. And, you know, there are stages. There's, I remember when I was scrambling, when I was employed or when I was self-employed, trying to keep my head above water, when I was employed making $15 an hour, my, you know, second or third job, I guess my job out of college, I made, what is it, $19 an hour, some really pitiful thing that I really would have wanted to start higher, but that's where I was in life. Like at that point, I couldn't help the world. I couldn't have taken on two kids. So that's not what I'm saying here, but it's like your entrepreneur's journey is you tend to go from employed and then you can maybe self-employed and then you become that entrepreneur where you're actually running a business. And then eventually, you know, if you make it past that, you become that investor or that person who's able to just put money to work and not have to work day to day. And in the early stages, you're scrambling, trying to take care of you and your people, which may just be you, maybe you and your spouse. But when, as you progress past that, it's like, start to think about, you know, what does legacy look like? And this doesn't have to be anything grandiose. It doesn't have to be, again, impacting the whole world or sacrificing your comfort or feeling guilty about your success, because I don't think you need to do any of those things. But this experience really reminded me about how much power and influence that we have, and that how we should use that power for good, and we should pass along, you know, use our resources to the benefit of those around us as much as is feasible.
So we kind of went all in with the kids. You know, we had new family photos taken, we bought furniture, we planned trips and worked hard to get passports, which we could never eventually get. And we went all in. We gave it our best and spent months talking, I should say spent hours daily for months talking with all of the kids about what was happening and what it meant and what it felt like and what family means and what it means to decide to make yourself less comfortable for the well-being of somebody else. And, you know, we're sort of teaching our kids about power, all of the kids about power in the process of this. And one of the things that I did early on that was really important, at least for me, is I took that tearful document that I was working on that plane on the way home from Boston, and I turned it into an email, a long email that I sent to kind of our inner circle of friends, and just let them know what was going on and that I was scared and that we were uncertain, but that we were going to try. And that was very important because it mobilized our crew. So one of the things that we got in the deal is a little girl, and we have lots of boy clothes and boy things, but we haven't had a daughter before. We haven't had a girl in our home. So one friend sent an American Girl doll, and other friends sent boxes of beautiful hand-me-down clothes from their daughters. And people sent letters to the kids. They sent packs of stickers, and other friends, local friends, came over and helped us take furniture apart and move it around, and spent hours with the stupid IKEA bunk beds, trying to figure things out. And I think we both, but I'll speak for myself, felt tremendously supported because we did decide to let people into the story, and not the version of the story that was, oh yeah, we decided to take on two kids and now we have four, hooray. But the version of the story that was we are scared. This is not easy. It's not going well. We're not, the real version of the story that wasn't sugarcoated, but that reflects what it feels like to have your life kind of taken apart and redone right in front of your eyes. And it's really important not to be alone in those kinds of moments.
And so as a listener, that might explain why I don't think you and I have done an episode together in 2 months, maybe more. We had guest hosts. I did one or two solo episodes. You and I just couldn't get into a room for 30 minutes. And since we certainly didn't feel comfortable talking about it early on, it's hard to talk or think about anything else, when you and I get in a room. And so the podcast has obviously been different, and had to adjust over the past couple of months as we've tackled this challenge.
Yeah, that was part of asking for help too. My friend Carrie Dills did two episodes and Kareem Maruki did one, and people showed up so that things could kind of keep marching on.
People had your back. They had our back,
Which is good. I think by way of maybe finishing up the story part of this, it didn't go very well with one of the kids. Kids who've lived through a lot of trauma and upheaval and transition, it's hard going for them, of course. And we had to make the very difficult decision about whether we could keep this kiddo once we had him with us. And we decided that we couldn't, largely because of the dynamics that were happening between him and our boys, or one of our boys in particular. And we felt some safety concerns and blah, blah, blah. I won't go into detail, but that was this double whammy, difficult decision. And I think that was probably the part of the story that is hardest, is that at least in part, we failed the experiment. That was the part of the story that for me right now is the hardest, in that it's probably too strong to call it a failure, but the experiment didn't fully work out. And I had to stick a kid on a plane and say, I love you. I'm sorry that it didn't work. And I, that kiddo is in a place where he is well loved. It's an okay story. But I'm still working through what it felt like for all of us, I think, to try something hard and for it to not work the way that we wanted even with all of our effort and power and support and financial resources and our big hearts, you know, it just couldn't work. And yeah, so that's, you know, that's still like sort of a live topic for me, but the little girl is still with us and we're hoping that that will be permanent, but even that we don't have full control over. So it's the wild roller coaster that we all know as entrepreneurs of giving yourself to something and going all in and taking the risk and putting in the work. And despite everything that's within your power to do, it doesn't always work out the way that you wish. And that's the story. And then, you know, then you get up and you do it again and you just keep trying. Although the analogy breaks down because let me just say, I am not trying to bring any more kids into our family.
Yeah,
we're not going to keep trying that at all. No.
I think we're tapped out on that one in particular. Yeah. No, I took it the same way as you did. And you and I both used the word, we said, well, you know, it's not a failure, but it kind of feels like it is how I've been phrasing it. You know, it's like we did the best we could and we went all in and we couldn't salvage it. Like I have no regrets because we were all in on it and we tried everything and you and I were on the phone with each other and it was like, things were just unraveling at the edges. And, it was not a sustainable situation at all. And so to your credit, like you went to bat big time and got stuff done. And as you said, like, I feel like the situation now is so much better for everyone involved. And you know, the kid you stuck on a plane is, as you said, in a very loving home and is in good hands, basically. So much better than what it would look like months ago if we had said no, right? I mean, there's a net win here. And yet you and I still carry this heavy weight, you know, and this burden of like, just this burden of like, this is hard. This is a hard thing about hard things.
Yeah. I don't regret doing it. And I don't regret making the decision to call it either. I think we, you know.
Yep.
But it doesn't make it hurt less. I mean, I think it will. I guess that's again, the hard thing about hard things is like, objectively, like we've done the cost benefit analysis and we've made our decisions and we've taken our risks and we have done at every turn the things that we thought were right and doable. But it doesn't save you from the emotional roller coaster of the ups and downs of it. Which is why I guess I have a job, because that's the nature of entrepreneurship too. The highs are high and the lows are low.
I feel like us talking about this here serves two purposes. One is that's why the podcast has been different for the past few months. Our lives have been in disarray and kind of, I mean, that's a logistical thing, but the podcast has been, you know, had different hosts and all that. And that's not necessarily our goal moving forward, but it is people coming in to back us up when our back's to the wall, which talks about, you know, again, people over results. It was friends who were willing to have our back. And then I think another takeaway really comes back to that power that we have individually as founders and entrepreneurs and people who get things done and who are willing to try hard things and are willing to sometimes win. And the victories are, you know, are great and they feel amazing, and sometimes lose. And sometimes those failures can be devastating, but that we're willing to embark on the journey and we're willing to get back up and try things again after, you know, no matter what the ending.
And all you founders out there, you're just a bunch of beautiful badasses. You really are. Keep doing what you're doing.
Cheers to that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.